This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door, including my favourite, the quarter pounder with cheese. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery, so the only thing left to say is, are you in? Order now on the McDonald's app, and you can also get reward points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants, 18 plus, rewards registration required, points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com. Hello and welcome to episode 296. Episode 296. It's a guess. We're good at guessing. So episode 292 of the Stacey West podcast. I've had a guess at the episode title. We're going to have a few guesses because it seems like that's the order of the day. I don't have to guess who's on with me this afternoon because I can see him and I spend the morning with him. Chris, how are you doing?
I'm tired. I'm really tired.
I guess you would be.
How are you?
Yes, good. So for those who do not know, and given the fact that we are social media whores, that's not going to be very many people. So we ran the Lincoln 10K today. And I know that there'll be people at the moment who have congratulated us and have sponsored us who will be listening to this going, oh, for God's sake, not again. Are they ever going to shut up about it? But we're not. We're going to talk about it a little bit, I think, just before we get started, because it may soften us up a little bit, because obviously you and I both said this was going to be a really downbeat podcast. And I think, you know, I was angry, you were disappointed, however it went. And then this morning happened, and it's kind of like, let's try and use that, leverage that positive, just to soften the blow of what's to come. So yeah, we did relatively well. I think we all hit our targets. I think you had hoped for under an hour, but didn't think you were going to do it.
Be honest, I had written off under an hour after my injury woes over the last few weeks. So to get in under an hour, and to grip my teeth for an hour, to be honest, my knee was absolutely killing me. I'm pretty chuffed with it, to be honest. And you were well under an hour, weren't you?
I was 56, 55 or 54, something like that, I think. So I was about, I'd set 57. And you know, I used it as a metaphor in the article that I wrote up. But actually, there were several mitigating factors as to why it wasn't a personal best. It's crammed at the start line. You can't really get into your rhythm a little bit. I ran out of legs in the last 20 minutes. I'm a half a stone heavier than I was the last time I ran. So there's all sorts of excuses. I was happy to see it start with a 56. Deep down, I really wanted to see it start with a 55. But it's getting round. It was warm as well, wasn't it, on the course?
It was. And don't want to say windy, but the little bit of a headwind up, you don't even notice as a hill when you're driving on it. But yeah, uphill headwind. Didn't enjoy that very much, having to do it in terms of the layout of the route. Yeah, you do it twice, don't you? Yeah. And yeah, I didn't enjoy that bit very well at all. But I'd say what I did enjoy, the moment on the finish line with Ben and Charlie, that was a genuinely moving moment. So you and I finished a little bit sooner than them. We made our way around to the finish line and saw those two finish. And then we may have jumped over the fence to spend a moment with them. On the first, like genuinely moving moment that was.
I like the way you admitted there that we actually made our way round to the finish line via the Magna Carta and had a quick pint, and then kind of went round, because, you know, the greatest respect, I think it was never about times, certainly not for Ben, who I think had found the whole process quite challenging. And I think it's been really good for him because he looks in much better shape. But obviously he felt something pop in his leg at 2 kilometers. So they effectively walked together, I think, for 8K and occasionally kind of upped it a little bit. And it was quite a good moment. And the thing is, we timed it just right, didn't we? So we got down near the cathedral and we're like, because my dad was with us and looking like, where are they? And we were waiting no more than a minute. And they came kind of around the corner. And then it was a genuinely moving moment. And we both jumped the barrier. You jumped the barrier first.
I don't know how I jumped the barrier, by the way, because I could hardly walk.
No.
hopped over the barrier and then continue to hobble for the rest of the day again.
I thought I was going to have to carry you down steep hill, and then all of a sudden you're vaulting like you're a Grand National horse. And I got one leg over, came down, and I split the love eggs like right in the middle. So I went down. I'm like, ooh, no, that's not good. It was a good experience. Last check, we'd raised £1,750, I think, for the foundation. That's not on us. People go, oh, well done, you've raised so much money. That's not on us. That's on all the great people who have sponsored us. All we've done is turned up and gone round, which, to be fair, thousands and thousands of other people did, and they haven't made such a song and dance about it up there as we have. But yeah, it's all good. We had some nice moments taking photos in our merchandise. So, and as I understand it, at the game on Saturday, quite a few people were expressing interest in the merchandise. Was that right?
Yeah, I had a few people mention it to me because I was sporting my brand spanking new Stacey West branded hoodie yesterday at the game. And yeah, a few people mentioned it to me. Said, oh, that's really smart. Can I get one? And my answer was, don't know. Maybe. we'll see. So maybe.
I can answer that question. If there's sufficient demand, then I would say that's probably an order of 10 or more, then we're happy to place the order. I mean, these were donated to us, as I've said on a podcast before, by Stu Fox and Marl up at Bellgate Corporate Clothing. But we can certainly place an order. And I think if people want them, I just wasn't arrogant enough to think that anybody would want to wear the logo of our podcast at a game.
It didn't even cross my mind that someone else might want to wear that, to be honest. Though we did see someone yesterday, and I'm so sorry because we had a picture taken with you by whoever this is. I didn't ask you your name, which is incredibly rude of me. But there's a chap who was sporting one of our running tops at the game yesterday and had a picture with myself and Ben, I think. Maybe myself and Charlie, and I can't remember, but two or three of us yesterday. So if that was you, thanks for coming and saying hi. Thank you for supporting. Sorry for not asking you what your name is.
Now, I should be able to answer this, but I've untagged all of the emails. So I obviously had the list of people who I'd posted out to, and now I can't find any of the actual orders. So it would obviously be one of our podcast fans in Lincoln. I'm just scaling through my orders now, but I am not going to be able to find them, unfortunately. So yeah, my apologies as well. But yeah, if that's you, there's actually two great photos that Bubs has taken of you in a running shirt as well. So drop me an email. I know that I've conversed with you on email. My sincerest apologies. And I'll send those pictures over. Yeah, and I mean, we can probably investigate T-shirts as well. So if you don't want a running shirt and you'd like a Stacey West T-shirt with the logo on it, I'm sure we can have a look at red and black ones of those. And obviously anything that any money that we raise would go to charity. So that would be a good thing. I suppose we have to talk about football, aren't we?
Oh, do we have to?
Well, we do, because the way that we say in this, it's almost like we were crap and we weren't.
No, I think that's the big thing from yesterday is we played pretty well on the whole. It was a very even game. Wigan are a good team. We'll touch on a few bits and bobs, obviously, in a few minutes. But I read your article earlier, and you kind of saying, as a supporter, when things don't quite go your way, you want something to blame. And I just can't blame anyone connected with Lincoln City at the moment. They've taken us from mid-table mediocrity, let's be honest, and given us something to really get behind and kind of reinvigorated the fan base, to be honest, over the last 2 or 3 months. And it's been a really good ride, and it's not over yet. It's likely over. It's not completely over. Yeah, I just don't think that anyone can be criticised yesterday that's connected with the football club. All the players left everything on the pitch yesterday. You can see how much it means to them. And I think as a fan, when teams are doing so poorly, not saying that we've been doing poorly, but just generally speaking in the world, when teams are doing poorly, fans often come out and say, we don't expect to win every week. We just want to see the team that cares and puts their heart, you know, works their backside off and wears their heart on their sleeve and works for the kind of the badge. There's no doubt that every single player in this football club does that. And also they've been pretty good at football over the last few months as well. Yeah, so it's not at all any blame for me towards the players. But you're right, you kind of need to put it somewhere. And we're going to touch on a big moment, of course, later that maybe...
Well, I guess
it's easier to put that blame towards, but there's quite a bit to talk about before we get there, I suppose, isn't there?
Sadly. And do you know what? I was doing my write-up and I actually thought there's only one thing I really want to talk about. And you forget that there was a game of football. First of all, let's be honest, we started slowly, or it felt like we started slowly. I think that was as much down to the opposition as well. And there's always that case for the opposition, because a lot of Lincoln City fans are only ever watching Lincoln City, and the Wiggins or the Reddings or the Carlisles are just like the henchmen in a superhero movie. They're nothing. They're just there to be brushed aside, and that's not actually how football is. I said on the podcast the other night, I thought Wigan were a good side. I thought they'd got players who I really liked. One of those players is Johnny Smith, who obviously started the game quite brightly. But they first 15 minutes, I actually thought Wigan were, dare I say, bordering on excellent. I thought that they had a good control of the game. Thought they had, because I can see the stats, they had better possession. They didn't create a massive amount in those first 15 minutes, by the way. People might have this impression in their mind that it was all one-way traffic. They had 70% possession, but it was only one shot, one on target in the first 15 minutes. But it was definitely a game where you began to wonder if perhaps, you know, was it a step too far for us? Because I think there was one or two leggy performances from us as well.
I don't think I can agree that it was necessarily just us. I think Wigan were good. I agree with that element of it. They were genuinely good. Their setup challenged us tactically. We started pretty quickly. Now, Joe Taylor got away down the left-hand side from a trademark clipped on the line from Sean Rowan. Obviously, the ball goes across the box. No one there to tap it in. But it was a threatening moment. But from that point, it was more in possession. Because what we've been brilliant at in the first 15 minutes of games in 2024 is going and getting after teams. Really pressing aggressively. Now, our PPDA was 8.67 in the first 15 minutes yesterday, which is really low, just as low as it has been in the last couple of months. But when Wigan did have the ball, they looked after it really well. They made it difficult for us to win it back. And their setup kind of made that quite challenging as well. So we, of course, lined up in our regular 3-5-2. Wigan were in a 4-2-3-1, but they were quite clever in possession. So when the ball was kind of slightly wider, so anywhere to kind of not central, the ball side fullback, when not in possession of the ball, moved inside to play next to one of their midfielders. So we're effectively in a midfield two with their holding midfielder, which effectively gave them a box midfield of four central midfielders against our three. So then they then had an overload centrally, which meant we couldn't be quite as aggressive in our press. It also opened up a direct passing lane to a really high and a really wide winger. And they mentioned Johnny Smith. He was particularly high and wide at all times in possession for Wigan, even when the ball was right on the other side of the pitch, which gives our wingbacks no license to go and push forward, because they have to mark that winger. And the space in front of them, where they would normally maybe be pressing a fullback if the fullback had the ball, is vacated. So that gave Wigan a 4v3 advantage centrally. And yeah, they had a lot of possession. And they were able to play through us at times. And I don't think that was from lack of effort. Like, our PPDA, which measures pressing intensity, was still pretty low in that first 15 minutes. But in terms of their possession, they were settled. They looked confident. They looked comfortable. To be honest, they looked like a team that didn't have any pressure on them. And to be honest, they didn't. And I think for the first time, we maybe did look like we had a little bit of pressure on us. In those moments where you maybe would snap into a tackle, you would snap and, you know, leave your marker to go and press the next one in the knowledge that you're going to get there and make, you know, it's worth that risk versus reward, then maybe we're just a little bit tentative and going, well, I can't afford to leave this guy, because what if they scored them a goal down? We best stay in the game. It's all kind of psychological there. But, you know, their goal came on, 20-something minutes, didn't it? And they were good up until that point. And the goal was a brilliant build-up. it came exactly from that setup that we mentioned. We pressed really well. We tried to win it back aggressively, play more aggressively than we did much before that, to be honest. And they played it through the centre of the park really well, worked it out to Johnny Smith. And the TV angle makes it look like a brilliant strike, but actually I had a perfect angle from where I was sat. Took a huge deflection and it just bent round Lucas Jensen. So at that point that Johnny Smith had the shot, we still had players behind the ball. As much as they played really well to get through us, and it was a genuinely good attacking play by Wigan, our lads had worked their backsides off to get back in position. And we had 7 or 8 players behind the ball at that point. When looks you're going your way, you get that block on the shot and it goes just wide, or it goes anywhere but in the back of the net. Or if you don't get a block on it, Lucas Jensen saves that relatively comfortably. It's just one of those things. But like you say, they had just one shot in the first 15 minutes, but they did have the majority of the game. They did dominate that first few minutes in terms of just possession, in terms of, I imagine, territory as well.
Yeah, but I think
they weren't throwing everything throwing the kitchen sink. They weren't creating chances and carving us open.
They weren't swarming all over us. They were just controlling the game. And the lad at the back, Charlie Hughes, impressed me. And it was actually him, I think, that started the move.
Yep.
I don't think, because I've just watched it back, for their goal. And Thomas Asgard as well, who a real useful looking player. I think he's come through the youth setup there, if I'm correct.
Yeah.
Really, really sort of nice footballer. And at that point, they scored a goal. And I think the atmosphere in the ground changes a little bit, because I think most people went into yesterday's game thinking we were going to win. It's not in an arrogant way against Wigan Athletic in any way whatsoever. You know, this isn't a Cheltenham or a Carlisle coming to Sinsel Bank where you go into it and everyone thinks you're going to win. It was just that this Lincoln City against this Wigan Athletic side, it felt like it was a game we would want to go and win. They didn't need to win, rather, didn't obviously wanted to win. And maybe for that, maybe at that first 15, 20 minutes, we just struggled to get the grip of the tackle change that you've just mentioned. And maybe that could also be down to the fact that there's two kind of very attacking midfielders on there in Jack Moylan and Danny Mandroyu, where perhaps if we'd got players fit, it would almost certainly be Danny Mandroyu and Ethan Hamilton rather than a Jack Moylan. Again, no disrespect to Jack. But you know, he exploded onto the scene in March. We've got to remember this is a young man still adjusting to life in England. And I thought that for probably 20 minutes or so, the game just looked to pass him by a little bit. In terms of the press as well, to be fair, I mean, he worked hard, but he looked in particular pretty easy to pass around. But that may be because of the pattern of play that they were coming from one side to the other and going to his area. I thought Danny Mandroyu actually was very good. And people were talking around me about our midfield not getting a grip of the game. I actually thought Ethan Arahan and Danny Mandroyu had really good games, and they were neck and neck, in my opinion, for man of the match. After the goal, I don't know whether it sparked, you say it sparked us into life. It's a cliche, but we were better after the goal. Now, whether that's because Wigan had got something to defend and they became a little more tentative, whether it's just because the atmosphere changed and we knew we had to go at them perhaps a little bit harder than we needed to at 0-0. But yeah, I thought the next kind of portion of the game, I thought we were, I'm not going to say excellent, because again, we didn't swarm all over them, but we had the chances. Mandroyu free kick into the wall, Joe Taylor goal disallowed correctly for offside. No guesswork needed. The linesman can see it. He's on the right side of the field. You know, he was offside. And then an absolute wonder goal, in my opinion, from Danny Mandroyu, because it isn't deflected. It's a great strike. And I've got to tell this story because it was classic and I felt like a real bastard when I did it. Literally, Mandroyu's got the ball on the edge of the area and Steve behind me is a great guy. He's going, pass, pass. You could see he's winding up to shoot. And excuse my language here, people. Steve went, oh, for fuck's sake, don't shoot. And obviously then the next thing you know, it's gone in the back of the net. And for those on camera, he turned round. I just turned round and I was just going, ah, in his face, pointing in his face. And then I realized it's like, wow, I'm a dick. I mean, it almost felt like, who was it? Martin Keogh, Ruud van Nistelrooy, kind of. Do you know what I mean? Like, whoa. And then I realized he was cheering as well. I'm like, oh, yeah, of course. But it was a good goal, wasn't it? And it's part of me finds it a frustrating goal, because that Danny Mandroyu was the Danny Mandroyu we saw in August. And we talk about ifs and buts. if Danny Mandroiu had been on that, on the form he's showing now and the form he showed in August, and it's slightly different in terms of positioning and all that, I get all of that, but that Danny Mandroiu over the course of the season's worth 3 or 4 more points to you on his own, isn't he? I mean, it was, how did you see that?
I think it's a confident Danny Mandroiu, to be honest, and I think he probably had his confidence knocked a little, understandably so, after how he was treated by Mark Kennedy, and he has had to fight his way back into the team. Of course, there's been injuries to central midfielders, but you kind of batted off the fact that his position's changed a little bit, but I think that's a huge factor. The fact that he is playing a bit deeper now, it kind of plays to his strengths in that it gets him on the ball more, and his strengths are obviously on the ball. But also, he's had to adapt and play deeper there, particularly defensively. And I was really impressed with him yesterday. We mentioned that in the first 20, 25 minutes or so, Wigan had the majority of the game, and that kind of 4v3 in centre midfield make it really difficult for us to kind of play our game. But we've also, both of us agreed yesterday, that Mandroiu and Araujo were probably neck and neck for man of the match. So it shows from that point onwards that they've had a real part to play. Also, you mentioned there that we had the ascendancy, but we weren't necessarily excellent. I actually thought we were. I thought we were excellent from the point that Wigan scored until half-time, to be honest. We had loads of chances. I wouldn't say pinned them in, but I just felt like we looked more like us. And it's kind of taking the risks and the aggression to press. It's not just running aimlessly at the ball, but it's knowing when to go and try and nick it. And I think we just did that a bit more. But what that does is it creates a little bit of chaos in the game. And I thought we were great when the game's playing at a high tempo, really, really good. Wigan are really good when they have settled possession. So it was just a case of just don't let them have that settled possession. Don't let them get into that shape where the fullback can drift in. They can create that and then build. When we actually made them play the ball quicker, we won it back more. And then we created, I don't want to say chance after chance after chance, but it always felt like, you know, we were looking towards that end of the pitch. There was always something going on. It always felt there was something that was going to happen.
When I say excellent, I mean, I don't mean we were pouring all over them with chance after chance after chance. I thought we played well, and it gave me enough confidence to believe that we were going to go on and win the game. At half time, I said, we'll go on and win this 3-1. The period, 30 to 45 minutes, we had 5 chances, plus potentially the blocked free kick, which might not count as a chance. I'm not sure when that was. That's not in that little list. And potentially the offside goal, which isn't rated by Y Scout either. So you could be looking at 7 chances, 3-4 on target. I mean, obviously the chance for Mandroiu. I wonder if that actually is on there, the chance for Mandroiu that was saved. Was it 40 minutes? That's actually his goal. So, yeah, it's just... Anyway, I find it really demoralising talking about the game in such a positive light, if I'm honest.
Yeah, but I don't know if I'd have been able to see it this way yesterday. I think I was objective enough to know that we played pretty well, but actually going through moment by moment by moment, yeah, and, you know, I think it's been easy to be a Lincoln fan over the last few months, hasn't it? And it's been easy to find the positives in the game. And we do love it when we look for them. We do often look for the negatives in the game as well, don't we, when we have played really well. But certainly from kind of 25 to 45, I thought we were really good. And like you said, we started the second half in the way that we finished the first. I thought we were brilliant. And again, it was the chaos. And we're great when the game is frantic and no one can settle. Even us, we're good at that. We get on top of that. And there was a real key moment for me that really knocked that. And I think you mentioned it in your write-up. It was, I think it was after the disallowed goal from Joe Taylor's, the second one, which was absolutely correct. What was like a light year offside. I watched the replay back. It wasn't as far offside as it looked in person, but it was offside.
You're talking about his second goal?
Yeah.
Can I just mention very briefly his first goal, what's really frustrating about it? Is he's offside when Danny Mandroiu's ball's played. But when he actually picks the ball back up, he's come back onside. And I know technically he's offside because he's interfering with play, but he hasn't even gained an advantage by it. I understand that's the rules, so I'm not moaning about that. But he's frustrating because when he's got the ball, he's back onside and he's had to beat a defender and put the ball in the back of the net. But sorry, so his second one was offside. Yep, let's go over to that. Sorry.
Well, that was it, really. But we was on the ascendancy. Right from kickoff, I felt in the second half, had some good territory, good intensity to our play. We looked confident. We looked like we kind of got a foothold in the game, just like we finished the first half with. And there was a real key moment for me because I thought Ben House really grew into the game and he was hauled down and he'd won the ball back, legitimately won the ball back off a centre-back. It was definitely not a foul. 100% it wasn't a foul. And it would have put us 2-on-2. And it is in that moment in the game where we were creating chances, we were having territory. And it was, you know, I don't want to say on the ropes, but they were certainly, you know, up against it for that first few minutes of the second half. And then the foul was given the other way and Ben House gets booked. And that, like Ben House on a yellow card, I'm not going to say that you want to bring him up after that point because he offers so much more, but you hugely limit some of his massive strengths. And I think you saw that a little bit. He had to back out of a couple of challenges. He can't put that foot in as much as he maybe would want to normally. And of course, he did actually concede a couple of fouls, which I think there's one heart in mouth moment when the referee gave a foul kind of near side. Joe next to me kind of said, "Oh my God, he's off. He's off." I was like, "Oh no, I actually didn't think it was." I was like, "Not every foul has to be a yellow card. You know, that's football is silly these days, and it almost feels like it should be." But it certainly limited him. But I also felt from that moment in time, it allowed Wigan to then go probably for the first time in that second half for them to just actually slow the game down, get some settled kind of possession again, and just break things up. And it felt like it really, really put the brakes on us. I never felt he really got into a rhythm after that. As much as we did score after that, albeit called out, disallowed again, and obviously Lass had a really good opportunity and we had a few half chances here and there. I felt that was a real key moment, to be honest.
It was. Sorry, I'm just watching his second foul back. That's not even a foul. His second one's not even a foul. They've both gone for the ball at the same time. It's not even a foul. Look, the first one, it was ridiculous. It's ridiculous because their boy, you can see Ben House win the ball. And as their boy goes down, he pulls House down.
Yeah, it was blatant. I was fully expecting a yellow card for the centre-back or whoever it was, midfielder. And there we go.
And it's momentum.
Could not believe it was given the other way.
Because it was a minute. It was a minute after the disallowed goal. I think Taylor's disallowed goal was 4 minutes into the second half and the foul is 5 minutes into the second half. Yeah, it's that marginal. And for me, like you say, we'd come out, we were in the ascendancy. I mean, Ethan Aran, by the way, to win the ball, carry it 50, 60 yards, and then people are saying he's hung on to it too long. And it is offside, but it's more marginal, quite right, than it looked in the stadium. In the stadium, everyone's going, he's miles offside. Actually, watching it back, there was only just daylight between him and the last man. Only just. But it's offside. It's a correct call. The second one's not. And I know we're going off on a tangent here, but like I said, I've got that on a freeze frame right now and it's two players going in. And the only thing I didn't particularly like about that was them then appealing, saying, send him off and flashing a card. And then 7 minutes later, he gets another yellow card, gets another foul as well. We're going to have to come on to it. We're going to have to. So in the first half, you and I both picked up on something where, and I think half the stadium
should be innocuous, really.
Yeah, it should be innocuous.
Get annoyed about it, but it was interesting that we both referenced it.
And I think a lot of people did. And it was, for me, it was one of the few mistakes that was made in the first half. There was a lot of people incandescent around me at the referee's performance in the first half. And I didn't think he was that bad in the first period. But there was a throw-in, where Rico kept the ball in. We were on the attack. And the Lino, who is 30, 40 yards away, and it goes back to, I think I've said it on the podcast, and if I haven't, I should have done. I think there should be four linesmen, four assistant referees at a game, and they should cover a quarter of the pitch each. Because one Lino cannot see all the way down the line for a corner or whatever. And Rico's kept the ball in. We can all see it. And sometimes we all think that we see something that we don't. Even Matt next to me was like, well, he's kept that in. Everybody knew he had kept it in. And the Lino's flagged for a throw-in. And it was one of the few things the useless did actually flag for, because half the time he kept his flag down. So we picked up on that and it's minor and it's a throw-in. Actually, as you, I think, mentioned, didn't they then almost... Did they go and get a corner or could they?
Yeah, it wasn't directly off it. So, because I made a bit of a tongue-in-cheek comment to Joe, who I sit next to, and said, and it was probably a minute later, maybe it was part of the same passage of play from their throw-in, but it wasn't directly like they did that, lobbed it in the box and won a corner, but they did end up with a corner. I was like, that's our throw. Like, it's not even a throw-in. And he says, well, it's just that's the butterfly effect, isn't it? I was like, it absolutely is. But it was, it shouldn't have annoyed us as much as it did, but it was just flipping annoying. And the amount of times that it often looks like the ball is out of play, and then you see the freeze frame, like in the Premier League or like in the World Cup, for example, last year. And then you see the freeze frame, and actually not the whole ball is over the line. It's like a millimetre of the ball from the, like, that kind of bird's eye view. Oh, no, it's still in. And you go, okay, fair enough. You trust that. Even though it looks out, it's still in. So for it to look absolutely 100% still in, to be given out, is just, oh, it's just bloody annoying. But it was a sign of things to come.
That's the point. It was foreshadowing, I think. And look, the goal. And it was a goal, in my opinion. And nobody can tell me otherwise, because there's no proof, because nobody knows for sure. And that's where you and I think, were... I mean, it's where I've just been... I'll be honest, I'm hacked off. I was thinking about it running around the 10K earlier. I'm hacked off, because I think we've had a legitimate goal chalked out. And before we talk about it, by the way, if that goal goes in, we win that game 2-1. We go to Oxford, 2 points behind them. The goal difference is two better in our favour, because we don't lose the game. I've no doubt whatsoever we don't lose that game with this
goal. I agree. I think that's the thing. We're all of us are confident in this Lincoln City team keeping a team out. You know, Wigan scored two goals yesterday with an XG of 0.73. You know, that doesn't happen very often that they score two. That's actually the lowest XG we've conceded for a while. You know, the second goal for them came off us pushing forward, so we'll kind of discount that. But, you know, us 2-1 up. And at that part of the game where we were on the ascendancy, we were the dominant team ever since Wigan went 1-0 up, to be honest, then I have every faith in this Lincoln City team seeing that game out 2-1. Maybe even 3-1 at that point, because you expect to maybe catch them on the break from that point if they are that bothered about going forward. Like you say, they didn't need to win. They didn't have a huge amount to play for. You don't want to question their professionalism, but with a team that's not got a lot to play for, if they go 2-1 down, have they really got that desire to go and really need to go and get another goal or two? I would have been 100% concerned, or as near to 100% as you could be, sure that we would see the game out at 2-1. And it was heartbreaking. And it felt unjust.
For those who have not seen it or have been living under a rock for the last 24, 48 hours, It's a deep cross that we're used to. And we've actually won the ball back again, by the way, really well in the attacking right-hand side. It's Lass, he puts the deep cross over it. We've seen it come from the corner, back stick, nodding it across. We've scored a few goals from it. Joe Taylor hooks it back in. And Rico steals it, puts it in the back of the net, 2-1. Now, there are two reactions that lead me to believe, one, that it was in play, and one that was out of play. Joe Taylor, the first thing he does as soon as he hooks that ball back is look at the lino. Now, that might be a striker's reaction, but the first thing he does is look at the lino. Not one of the Wigan players immediately appeals the goal.
And you would. I've conceded a few goals in my time. If any goal feels unjust, you are hands up and you are appealing anything. Even if it's the smallest little shout, you are appealing it. So I agree with you. I think Joe maybe looking across the line out of instinct. Maybe he thought he was offside off a deep cross. We know it wasn't given for offside. Ah, but the thing that gets me the most is, you know, the linesman has got to look through a sea of bodies, two posts, a net, and he has to be 100% sure that the whole ball has gone out of play for that goal to be chalked off. And he can't know. He can't. It's impossible for him to know. And as Michael Scubola, I was really impressed with Michael's interview after the game yesterday, by the way, because he never criticises referees or officials at all. And even he mentioned it, but he was really respectful towards the performance and the opposition. I thought Michael's interview was class yesterday.
Yeah.
But I agreed with him. And it's like, the guy's guess. And that's what hurts so much. The bloke has just had a guess. And I don't know what he gets out of it. I don't know why would you make that decision in that moment? Because you're meant to give the striker the benefit of the doubt in those 50-50 decisions. You know, one attacking football, that's the whole of kind of English football's ruling, is you need to be 100% sure of the decision. Obviously, VAR is brought in because of those real contentious ones. And I would still rather be pissed off today than have VAR in League
that's
One.
That's a bad thing, yeah.
But it's the more the fact that he just can't know. There's not a single person in that whole stadium that knows 100% that ball was out of play. And he's got to look through all those bodies and those two posts, and he's seen, and he, and it's like he was 100% sure, and he just can't be.
He's good.
That's what hurts. Yeah. And that's what pissed me off as well.
It hurts because it hurts more than Smodic's dive a couple of years ago for me, because I think it's more crucial. I think if Smodic doesn't dive, we still don't get automatic promotion. Nothing changes. Genuinely think if that ball goes in, we win 2-1. I think we go to Oxford. It's a big game. Anything can happen. Yeah, Oxford want to come at you and attack you. That's our game. That's what we do. That's how we can set up. It's, the emphasis would have been on them, even though they would have been ahead of us. Yesterday, the emphasis was on us because we had to go beat Wigan. It was on us at Carlisle. It was on us against Leighton Orient. But when the emphasis is on the home team to put the performance on, and they're on a little bit of a roll, and there's all that pressure for them. And I'm not saying we're not going to go and beat Oxford, by the way. But that changes the dynamic massively. So I think it's that crucial. And he has guessed. Let me ask you one question, right? Gut feeling, did the ball go out?
Probably. Yeah, I think maybe it did. But was the whole ball out? Don't know.
I don't think the whole ball's out. And personally, I don't.
But it can't. No one knows, and that's the point. The point is, no one knows, not even the linesman. Yep. So for you to be so confident enough to give it is just baffling. And I just don't understand in that situation why that is the decision that you've come to. How can you be that sure? You can't be.
So let me ask you another question. If you're a player who's being substituted, we're going to move on because we're just going to sound like bitter men.
Yeah.
If you're a player who's being substituted and you're told to go off one touchline, and what you instead do is put your hands on the referee and then try to walk off the other way, should you be sent off?
Yes. Yeah, that's the rules. That's the laws of the game, isn't it?
Where's?
I know there's only about 6 or 7 minutes left at that point, but we know we're good in the last few minutes. We know we're good at making an extra man count. That's, you know, I think the big talking point is the goal, and that's going to overshadow everything else. But that's a big talking point. I know it's maybe splitting hairs a little bit, but I think if you're trying to uphold the laws of the game and you're putting your hands on the ref, you know, you watch that in the Premier League, you get a red card. Like, there's not even a question about it, and no one questions it. If a red card's given, everyone goes, yeah, absolutely right decision. Even his own players would kind of say, fair enough. They tried to hurry him off, didn't they, after he pushed his... I actually thought Godo had played brilliantly up until that point. He was real threat on our side. I was pleased to see him going off. But he should have been. I personally think. Yeah, I agree. He should have been sent off at that point.
With injury time, there was 26 minutes left.
Oh, was there? I didn't realize that long left. Bloody hell!
With injury time,
much less than that.
But I think that's actually credit to Wigan that you think there was less time than that, because I actually thought they were really good in the period after the disallowed goal through to the end of the game, because there wasn't an awful lot of clear cut chances, and I thought they managed the game well without... They didn't resort to too much time wasting. I saw somebody comment that they were Wickham levels. I don't think they were. They were doing the same sort of game management that I understand we did at Reading the week
before. They were doing it in the first half as well, though, to stop us getting that tempo. And I think right from the start of the game, in possession, they moved the ball well, but every set piece they had, they took their time on in the first half, and they continued that through the game. But that's... You know, you're playing against a team as aggressive as us and as high tempo as us. That's exactly the blueprint to play against any team that plays with the intensity that we do. So, yeah, I didn't have a huge amount of complaints directly towards Wigan. I thought they were a good team, to be honest. And I agree. I think they saw the game out. But I also felt, you know, that goal disallowed Knox's, obviously, Ben, the situation we already mentioned, the Ben House decision, which limited his effectiveness and it allowed them just to slow the game down, break it up at times. Like, we were really good up until that point. And yeah, it just knocked... I don't know if it knocked a little bit of belief, if it... I don't know what it was. There's so many factors, isn't there? But I think you just, from a Wigan perspective, you can be really pleased that they managed to settle the game back down again from that point and see it out. I don't think they deserve to win 2-1. But it's one of them. It's a good finish on us chasing the game. You can't really complain at that. Like Michael said after the game in his interview, they were aware of the Oxford score. They knew point isn't good enough today. We have to go and try and get three. And it's just, you know, sometimes you get caught out the other side. And I would much rather us lose a game by trying to win it, if that makes sense, than how we were at the start of the season by settling.
Yeah, I agree. I agree 100%. Shall we look at moving on from Wigan?
Yeah, probably.
We'll go to an ad break. And hopefully when we come back, we'll be full of the joys of spring. A slightly cold, chilly spring, but we'll be full of the joys of spring anyway.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door, including my favourite, the quarter pounder with cheese. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery, so the only thing left to say is, are you in? Order now on the McDonald's app, and you can also get reward points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants, 18 plus, rewards registration required, points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Right. Well, thanks for that. I am going to try and get the volume turned up on the McDonald's adverts. I have spoken to TalkSport, but regrettably, over the last couple of days, I haven't had time to record anything a little louder. But rest assured, what it basically says is I like quarter pounders with cheese. The double quarter pounder was what I had post 10K, and it was lovely. And now I feel a little bit sick. And we ate it about, 6 hours ago?
Yeah, something like that now. Yeah.
Still feel a bit sick. I won't be feeling sick if we go to Oxford United and win, because it might be 5 points, but we're a game in hand over Blackpool. If we go to Oxford and win the game, okay, they're still in the driving seat, but it opens up a world of possibilities, particularly when they play Stevenage on Saturday, and particularly when we play Cheltenham. We could look at taking it to the last day. Any other result and it's gone, it's dead, it's finished. Because Oxford won't lose their last game of the season. I can't remember who it was against now, but they won't lose their last game of the season. I should really know who it's against. It's almost as if I was doing something else today, which negated a little bit of research off the top of my head. Is it Exeter? They play away. I think they'll get something from that. Anyway.
It is Exeter away last game of the season.
It is Exeter away. Yeah, no, I actually checked while I was talking because I've got one of those quiet clickable mouses now.
Oh, that's clever. I can't multitask. It's impossible. I do this at work a lot. So I do sometimes deliver like face-to-face group sessions, but sometimes it's online. And it's harder online because some people are talking to you, but some people are typing in the chat instead that don't necessarily feel as comfortable using the microphone. And that's fine. And then I find myself like replying to someone in the chat, but I've completely stopped presenting. And the people that are actually in the room and then just like, go on then, say something. That's some rubbish. I'm quite good at presenting generally, but that specific situation I am very, very bad at. So, yeah. But anyway, extra away.
Yeah, it's difficult. Yeah, extra away. But we'll go with it. It's all about Tuesday. And it really, when we say, when I did the winner takes all, this is because, if we can get the win there, if we can get the win at Oxford. And we've won at Oxford before, and I think they're still without Cameron Brannigan, who I think went off injured. It's definitely doable, even though they have and have scored, 13 goals in 3 games without reply, which is mind-blowing when you consider the run that we went on. I don't know. Do you know what? I just feel deflated thinking about it. And if we win, everyone will be excited and it'll all be back on again. And I don't want to talk playoff chances because we've had so much, I've had criticism when you write teams off and all that sort of stuff. But, I mean, they're a good side, aren't they, Oxford? And they look like Des Buckingham, who you and I both raved about when he was linked with the Lincoln job. And he's had a real nightmare, I think, in terms of, I mean, they're still in the playoffs, but in terms of they were knocking on the door of automatic. And he's kind of changed them a little bit, changed the way that they approach games a little bit. But, did the result, I mean, yesterday's result kind of flattered them a little bit, 2.47 to 2.09 in terms of XG on Y Scout. So it could have been 2-2. They had six shots on target, according to Y Scout, and scored 5 of them. Is it winnable? Can we win it?
Of course it is. Of course it's winnable. It's tough. They are on the sort of form that we were on not so long ago, but before the international break, really. I think that since that point, a lot of those underlying metrics for us
that were so dominant, not just the scoreline, but the all the kind of performance data that kind of backs up that, yeah, we are as good as we look. We are. Look, it looks like it by the results. Those metrics have started to drop off a little bit, understandably so. It was unsustainable to perform at that level for the rest of the season, and we still picked up some good results. Oxford just hit form at the right time. They've really used a quite embarrassing defeat, 5-0 defeat by Bolton, as a springboard. So credit to them for that. I think, you know, you can use that, can go one of two ways. You can crumble from that point, or you can use it as a way of refocusing. And from that point, they've won 2-0, drew 1-1, won 4-0, won 4-0, won 5-0. That's impressive. Doesn't matter who you're against. That's impressive run. But I think their opponents are worth talking about in that run, because up until yesterday, yes, they won 3 of their last 4, only conceded 1 goal, but they played Port Vale, Shrewsbury, Fleetwood and Burton. So 4 teams that you'd absolutely expect them to beat. Also, as much as they've been inconsistent for ever since Des Buckingham has taken over, on paper, in terms of their individual games, you would expect them to win those. But we all know what momentum can do to you. And yeah, for them to go in yesterday and then beat Peterborough 5-0, like you say, maybe a little bit fortunate in terms of the overall chances created, shots on target, to goals converted. They scored 5 goals against Peterborough. Peterborough didn't score any. That's a real convincing win against a big team, because Oxford's, I think the stick that you could have beat Oxford with for the majority of the time that Des Buckingham has been in charge is that they'd only picked up 3 points against teams in the top 10 up until yesterday. And that was a really convincing performance on the back of some other convincing performances, because in every single one of those last 5 games, they have created an XG of 2 or more. Also, almost 2 or more. The other one was 1.93. So 1.93, 2.47, 3.74, 2.31, 2.47. And they've conceded an average of just over 1. So they've been like a goal and a half ahead in terms of performance data of every one of their opponents on average over the last 5 games. They're good. They're as good as we expected them to be at the start of the season. They were great at the start of the season. They showed they were good. They had good individuals. They were a good team. Manning left, went to Bristol City. They lost a little bit of their form, lost a little bit of their momentum, but Des Buckingham seems to have got it back now. But Peterborough, as good as they are going forward, have a soft underbelly. That was clearly exposed by Oxford on Saturday. We haven't got that weakness. We're not as good as going forward as Peterborough, even when we scored all of our goals. You know, they came from winning the ball back high up the pitch rather than a huge amount of real kind of pretty build-up as such. We could definitely get something out of this, but getting something isn't good enough. We need to win. And we can. We can. I just keep, you know, honestly, do I think the playoffs are dead now? Can you say we're not going to talk about the playoffs? That's the whole point of this part of the season, is it's about the playoff race. So we need to talk about the playoffs. We're playing for one space. Is it likely a bridge too far where we stand right now? Yeah, I think if you looked at all the statistics and looked at all of the betting odds, we're not the favourites. But we said that when we drew to Stevenage. So I'd happily be proven wrong again, but can we go to Oxford and win? Yes. That is my overriding belief. Will we? Not sure, but we can.
You look at their team. Okay, so they've got obviously Cameron Brannigan out. Now, they've got a lad plays for them, Tyler Goodrum, who I picked up on, I think, last season or maybe even the season before when he came. He's a youngster come through. I think he's got a massive career ahead of him. I like the lad Kieran Brown at the back. I think, did he score against us at Sincil Bank, Kieran Brown? I might be wrong about that. I thought he scored against us. Josh McEachran, who's obviously a former Chelsea youngster who's been at Brentford, and he plays holding midfield. You look at their attacking players. I mean,
Josh Murphy, I think, has probably been one of the standout performers in League One in the last 6 to 8 weeks.
He cost Cardiff 11 million when he went there in 2018. You're talking about a player that's been right at the top of his game. And maybe Josh Murphy, Ruben Rodriguez, who I think we were linked with in the summer, but a bridge too far. Owen Dale, who was he Carlisle? No, it was Blackpool, no, wasn't he? It was Blackpool and Portsmouth.
Yeah, it was, I think it came through Crewe.
Crewe youngster. And then you look at the players they're bringing off the bench. You're looking at Marcus Brown, who, again, off the top of my head, West Ham. I'll click on it and double check myself. West Ham youngster. You're talking James Henry, who's been there years. He was there back when they beat us 6-0, another excellent player. Marcus McGuane was at Barcelona, for God's sake. He was a Forest boy at Barcelona. Yeah. And that's why at the beginning of this season, I tipped Oxford to go up. And aside from this rivalry, and aside from kind of the fact that when they're our rival, I don't want them to win any game, they're a side that I think we are still aspiring to be. They were the side that we aspired to be when we came into this division, because under Carl Robinson, who I don't think was got the best out of them. I think he had all the instruments, but he didn't have he couldn't get a tune out of them. But they were still almost always just tucked in that mid-table. They were just tucked out under.
Yeah, they were always playoff chasing.
They were
always within a shout of the playoffs within the last few games of the season. For the last God knows how many seasons, season hugely underperformed.
One season, I think they were struggling down the bottom, and I think the season before we came up, they were in the relegation battle until like five games before, and then they shot up the table and finished like ninth or tenth. But they're what we aspire to be on the field. I'm not so sure that we're not what the likes of maybe the Oxfords might want to aspire off the field. Well, for a start, we've got a proper ground, haven't we, that we own and all that sort of stuff. And I don't want to have that dig, but they do have that embarrassment of riches. But I tell you something, if we don't go up, it doesn't cost us massively this season. We're still good. If they don't go up, the financial cost to them is, in my opinion, greater. Their wages are greater, their wage bill's greater, the money they pay agents, as we probably already know, which we can touch upon very briefly in a minute, is greater. And I'm not looking at playing down their their achievements or anything like that. I'm not saying they've outspent. I'm not saying anything like that at all. They have outspent us. We are competing at the level of the Oxford and Blackpools. I think we are just that tiny little bit away from it. But whatever happens on Tuesday night, we can be massively proud.
Yeah, and I think that's so important to remember, because, like you say, that's difficult to see yesterday. Like, we just looked back on the game yesterday and kind of explained how, on the whole, it was a pretty good performance. If we came out of yesterday's game mid-season with the same result as well, and everything that happened exactly the same, but it was mid-season, we all come out of that going, good performance on the whole. Deserve something out of it. Unlucky not to get something. The linesman's a wanker. There's lots of good signs moving into the rest of the season, don't we? We come out of it with those positives. I think it was difficult to see the positives because there was so much riding on that individual game. But the bigger picture for Lincoln City, which we've been mentioning for months and months and months now, but the bigger picture for us is it's really positive. And if we don't quite make it this year, we're going to be in a really, really strong position in the summer. You know, we don't need a huge squad churn this summer. We're going to add rather than kind of just rebuild. And we've got a real big opportunity to kick on next season. Now, it's likely League One is going to be a much stronger division from top to bottom next season than it has been this season. But also, we're going to be significantly stronger ourselves. I thought it was interesting you mentioned there about Oxford, because I think, you know, pound for pound, is their squad better than ours? Probably. Yeah, probably. In terms of League One, like, guaranteed quality and depth, I think depth you mentioned there is the big one. Yeah, I think so. But off the pitch, we are an aspirational club for that, a club of that sort of size, because we're a similar size club to Oxford, I think, overall.
I agree.
And, yeah, I think with the stability that we have behind the scenes, the real kind of joined-up thinking that there is behind the scenes as well, from, you know, from owner to board to management to players, everyone's got that alignment. I think that's difficult. You can't buy that. That's built over time, and we have that in abundance. We just need to keep gradually improving it on the pitch. And we've kicked on massively in 2024 compared to where we all thought we was going to be coming into last year. So if we take the overall trajectory of since Michael Scubara has come into the club, with that alignment from the whole of the club behind the scenes, I'm really excited about next season. And also the style of football comes into that, because we know we're going to be entertained. It's going to be worth every penny of our season ticket, whatever league we're in. So, yeah, it's difficult sometimes to see the positives on the back of that tough result yesterday, and especially with the significance of Tuesday's fixture against Oxford. But whatever happens, I think it's so important that we're all really proud of our football club, because I feel really proud of us.
Yeah.
I'm proud that Michael Skibbola has a little section on Football Focus. I'm proud that we're an aspirational club behind the scenes in terms of things like the fans share, and we're the second or third club in the country to kind of get that off the ground, and the significance that that shows in terms of the kind of wider development of football. The fact that we're probably a little bit ahead of the curve in regard to the potential incoming financial regulations, we're going to be in a position to kind of punch above our weight a little bit with that. There's so much good going on, and I would hate for one bad result, or potentially, if the season does peter out now, for that to really detract from the positivity, because we can really kick on in the summer. We really, yeah, really can, and start the season well next year and have a really exciting season. But what if we win? What if we go to Oxford? We get 3 points.
Then we're relying on Evans again, aren't we? Then we go to
They're
Chelsea.
They're crap now as well. They are rubbish now, aren't they? We knew they were rubbish anyway.
Yeah, but so we don't want that, do we? We want them to be good.
We want them to refine their form.
Did they have a man sent off yesterday as well?
I don't know. I don't care.
They did. Who did they have sent off? Because I did see it. It was Butler, whoever Butler is.
Left back.
Yeah, so their left back got sent off. Cracking. By the time we go to Cheltenham, so next week, if I don't know who's playing in midweek, I mean, Cheltenham are 5 points short of safety, and they must play in midweek. They play Burton on Tuesday night. I mean, that is a big, big game for them, because obviously, in fact, Burton could relegate them, couldn't they?
Yeah, good point. Yeah.
If Burton win that game, that relegates Cheltenham. How can they play Burton on Tuesday night when Burton have... Oh, okay. So actually, Cheltenham have got 4 games left to play. So Burton couldn't relegate them, because if they won, there'd be 8 points and Cheltenham would still have 9 to play for. So they would really have something to play for against us. So they are fighting for their lives if we could beat Oxford United. Oh, my Lord. Do you know what? It would be the most Lincoln thing ever for us to now go and beat Oxford and keep it alive again. And it's like, it reminds me a little bit of relegation in 98-99, where we were almost definitely relegated up until the last 3 games. And then I think we'd won like 2 of the last 3 or 4 and took it to the last day. And it's like, it's the most Lincoln thing to give you that little bit of hope. And then we lost to Wickham. Or like when we were 2006-07, when we were in free fall under Scoey, and then we won the last game against Chester and we assured of the playoffs. It's like we're in the playoffs, and then we lost to Bristol Rovers. It would be the most...
I didn't really lay a glove on them either.
No, we didn't. But then I say that, and you think about everything that we've done in the past few seasons. And like last season, we finished 11th. But we finished 11th when really 14th, 15th might have been more reflective of where we are and what we've done. Whereas I think if we were to finish 8th, which is probably where we're going to finish, probably we're going to finish 8th, maybe 7th. But if we were to finish there, you'd go, probably about right. I mean, if you look at the teams at the minute that are below us, Stevenage, Orient, Northampton, Exeter, Wigan, Wickham, Bristol Rovers, Charlton, Reading, Cambridge, Shrewsbury, Burton, Port Vale, Cheltenham, Fleetwood, Carlisle, you'd probably only say Wigan and Reading are the ones that you think, you know, they're going to be really good next year. Orient, possibly. We've been better than all of those other teams on a regular basis. If you look above us, Blackpool, probably a little bit fortunate to be where they are. You know, New Year's Day, they were crap. It was only because we took a bitty side there, didn't we? Broken by injuries.
Really.
Yeah. And that's how that's where we've got to this point where that's 68 points and we're on 70. If we'd won that day, if my grandma was a wheel, if she had wheels, she'd be a bike, all that stuff. But we'd be on 71 points, they'd be on 67, and we'd now still be 2 behind Oxford going into the game. So many ifs and buts, but over the course of the season, they even themselves out. And Reading fans will probably not be listening to this because they don't care, but they'll be going, well, should have a boy sent off last week for handball. So things even themselves out with your little offside rant, don't they? Or your little out of play rant. And they'd probably be about right.
Yeah. Football, isn't it?
Sadly.
I think it's interesting you say that, it's kind of about where we should be, because you're absolutely right. Because last year, I think right at the start of last season, feels like a very long time ago now, we all felt, as long as we're staying in League One and we're not really directly threatened by relegation, that was a good season, and that's exactly where we finished. Going into this season, I think all of us in our predictions had Lincoln to be playoff challengers. Some of us had us making that last spot. Some of us, I think you had us just missing out maybe. But we was all in that conversation. And it looks like that's exactly where we are going to be ending in that last kind of, with either our last playoff spot or a couple of spots below it. And that is where we deserve to be.
Yeah.
So one of those spots. But it shows, but that shows the progression of the club, I think, over the last 12 months. And if we keep progressing at that rate, then we are going to get to where we want to go eventually.
Got the destination right, but I don't think we exactly have gone there in a straight line. It's like I've gone from Louth to Lincoln, but I've gone via Boston, Grimsby and Doncaster. How the season has been. What's also crucial, and I think this is really important to bear in mind, if you take games won and look down the table, I know this might sound obvious, but every team above the next has won more games or the same. So a bar Reading and Wigan, who obviously have had points deducted. So at the end of the day, you win 18 games, but Blackpool have won 20 above us and Oxford have won 21 above them. So in reality, they deserve to be there because they've won more games. And I know that you draw point, all that sort of stuff. But for me, we are literally just a gnat's knacker away from being that team that are in fifth or sixth. I had us as dark horses, but not making the playoffs. And I think that's right. But Ben listening in will say, well, you did have Fleetwood in the playoffs. So whatever. Yeah. I meant the League Two playoffs next year. Obviously, I was looking ahead.
Yeah, of course, naturally.
So we don't
have... Well, Bristol Rovers to get relegated, so that didn't transpire at all.
Well, yeah, but they're only 14 points. Well, yeah, 14 points.
Just on that, I know we might do a podcast, actually, or we might do a YouTube thing looking back at our predictions. That could be always quite fun. But I just felt with Joe Barton in charge, it had the potential for it just to blow up. And what happened is he blew up, but he'd been sacked by that point.
Yeah, Joey Barton. Let's just, we'll have a very, very quick, so we're on 58 minutes, so very, very quick. I mean, he's an odd one now, isn't he? He's gone a little bit Matt Letizier or a little bit Lawrence Fox. And look, you, the people listening in, we don't do politics. This isn't a political show. But Chris and I are liberal left. And we are, aren't we? We're kind of lefties. We're not sandal wearing, tofu munching, you know, free the beavers, all that sort of stuff or whatever. But we are left leaning. But he's just gone Lawrence Fox right wing. I mean, he's gone two-footed on women's football. And then the other day, from nowhere, he starts on Gab Sutton, not once, but twice. Now, look, Gab Sutton is, you know, he's a nice lad. He's one of the gentlest lads, you know. He's got a great following on Twitter. You're talking 25,000 people respect what Gab says. He takes a lot of time to speak to a lot of football supporters about their team in order to have the most kind of general overview as he possibly can. And for Joey Barton to start calling him a fat lad or whatever, oh my God. And he's going, oh, what was he deep up? Real men can't be bullied. That's what he said. Real men can't be bullied. I mean, what is he? Where does he live? The 1960s.
A bloke needs genuine help, I think. He's just, I really dislike him. It's not difficult to dislike him, is it? And it was not surprising at all that he's unraveled quite as much as he has once he's out of football again. But, I just want him just to be quiet now. Just go away and be quiet, please.
I liked him. That's the craziest thing.
Oh, no.
In 2017, when we played Burnley, I liked him because he played the villain, but I thought that there was a deeper character there. I didn't realise that the deeper character was a role we was playing, and it was basically just... I don't want to call him a knobhead on here because knowing Joey Barton, he's the sort of person that will turn up at your house and go, did you call me a knobhead? Do you remember Curtis Woodhouse did that? Didn't someone call Curtis Woodhouse a knobhead on Twitter or Facebook or something? And he went round to their house.
I don't know.
So just to clarify, I haven't called Joey Barton a knobhead because I don't know him. But normally if you're a grown man and you're going in on somebody on Twitter and on like Gab and just basically picking on size and all that sort of stuff, honestly, it's. Yeah, have a little bit of dignity, isn't it? A little bit of dignity.
The man has zero.
Yeah, well, I'm guessing he has zero. And that brings us nicely towards the end of the Stacey West podcast, where once again, we're making an educated guess, which you're allowed to do when you're on a podcast, because we speculate and we discuss and we analyse and we guess and we put opinion across. You can't do that when you're an assistant referee. Any assistant referees listening to this, you have to be 100% certain that a ball is in or out of play. Otherwise, a lot could ride on it, like a team's playoff hopes. Our playoff hopes are not dead, but they are hanging by a string. They're like a runover cat in the middle of the road. We're still twitching. We're still warm. There's still a little meow, but all it's going to take is us being peeled up and thrown away, I think. Last time I said that, we went on a massive unbeaten run, scored 16 goals in three games and put ourselves in playoff contention. I sincerely hope next time Chris and I are together, which might be Sunday or might be Tuesday, that we've done exactly the same again. We may do, we may not, whatever. It's a great time to be a Lincoln City supporter. Me and Chris are off to curl up in a ball, not together, and moan about our aches and pains while secretly being dead proud of what we did in the 10K. Same thing with Charlie and Ben. Up the imps.
Up the imps.
It's the 90th minute and all your mates around watching the imps on iFollow. You've got your McNugget share boxes on the go. Your mates already got booked for double dipping, but then you steal the last nugget, snatching all 3 points. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. You in. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.